Max Hall and Melbourne Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
This is Nat Fyfe from the Fremantle Footy Club.
Trent Cotchin from the Richmond Footy Club.
Scott Benderbury from the Collingwood Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Patrick Cooch from the Carlton Footy Club.
It's Rory Sloane here from the Adelaide Crows.
This is Tom Mitchell. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Hey, it's MJ from the Coaches Panel. I hope you're well and welcome to our final Before Footy Starts pre-season strategy episode. There'll be more to come after opening round, but we are just mere hours and days away from AFL being back and 4 points of AFL being up for offer for our teams. Yeah, opening round is just moments away, and there's a ton of strategic stuff we've got to get through. We've got to talk buyers. We've got to talk about some big movers and shakers from the community series. I want to talk about M1 on this episode. That feels like an interesting spot of what people are doing in the fantasy football community, and ultimately a reflection on our starting squad structures. But there's one other element we want to get to, and it's big breaking news that at time of recording has just landed in the past couple of hours. To help me unpack all these elements, I've assembled a couple of members of the Coaches Panel. In his second year, part of the Coaches Panel, he's having an absolute ripping preseason like he did last year. It's Mini Mug, mate. Nice to have you back on the podcast. Plenty of big conversations to have heading into round, well, zero, for sake of a better term.
You knew it was coming, didn't you? This is why you pushed our recording just that little bit further back. You had that news. You had you were hooked into what was going on in the grapevine, and you knew that this was coming, didn't you?
My Frio sources just might be a little bit stronger than yours, mate. So we'll wait and see how that all plays out. And also on this episode, he's been part of the Coaches Panel since its founding. It's one of our fellow co-founders and the 2020 winner of Dream Team. It's Ritz. Hello, mate. How are you?
Hey, mate. How you going?
Better than
a big couple of days. It's been a big couple of days, mate. We've had Zach Williams, we've had Sean Darcy, we've had Flow-ons. Like, wowee, yeah. You've had an SC, mate. You had an SC do today, and you did your hair up beautifully and took it out into public.
So, true story, you pack of punks. So, I had Tuesday evening, the Supercoach community, the guys at Supercoach got a lot of the Melbourne-based community content creators together for a bit of a do, chance to go check out some stuff at Fox Footy, hang out with Heath Shaw. It was just a great time to hang out with everybody. And the amount of people that commented and pointed at my hair was a little bit too ridiculous. So this is starting to get out of hand. I had a few people, even the godfather of Supercoach decided to just be like, anyway, that is neither here nor there, but there was a lot of hair commentary going on. But it's a brilliant community, the Supercoach and the AFL fantasy community. There's great content creators and an absolute pleasure to be a part of it. Let's talk about Sean Darcy, though. That is big breaking news. Maybe not so much for him, although I was seeing some people in the community showing some interest in the Supercoach landscape of selecting him. Rather, it's the compound that comes around Luke Jackson. There was 8 games last year that he played without Darcy, and in AFL fantasy, he goes at 99, and he goes 118 in Supercoach. The club have confirmed this injury of Darcy. He's going to miss a few rounds. So quite vague. If it was more prescriptive, it might make selection and structures a little bit easier. Mini Mark, I'll start with you. Is it just as simple as this is a gift horse for those of us at F1 that have been running the Fishers, the Billings, the Jordans, the Fifes, whoever it is? It's like finally a premium, quote unquote, forward we can trust. Are we missing it if we don't fade and adjust, or are we overreacting to some news?
Well, this is the tricky part. It could very well be a gift horse. It could also be a poison chalice. We just don't know yet. And I think we need to wait. But while we wait, while we've got this, 8-day, 9-day buffer between now and when round one starts and when we actually go into our lockouts, we can explore. We can have a look at what our teams looks like with Jackson at F1. Or Jackson at F2, depending on how you're structuring up. I think at F2 is probably about the deepest you'd look to run him in any format. And you can look at what your team looks like without him. And that's the best part. Like, while we're in this stage where there's a lack of clear information from the club, because they've said that they're going to update about his injury timeline in the coming week. So that's good news. At least we'll get some sort of an update probably before round one starts. we can actually try and figure out how we want to go, what will change in our teams, how we will actually look at him, whether or not he's the one to go for, or whether or not it might just be that, you know, if it's only a couple of weeks, maybe we do fade him.
Rids, what's your take on this one? Is it simple and easy and adjust and break some structures? Again, potentially for Flanders owners, McRae owners, people that have paid up for a premium, this gives them another avenue and option. But let's address those that have gone for the savers approach in the forward line. Is this worth preparing a structural change given what we know Jackson can do in this sole ruck row, not just in 8 games at Fremantle, but we saw in glimpses and moments early days at Melbourne as well?
Okay, there's a lot of variables, yeah? So yes, there's a lot of unknowns right now. So let's just talk hypothetically. He averaged close enough to 100 without Darcy in the team last year. Is there any other forward right now that you can see that could do 100 on his head in this role? And I don't think there's anyone. Even a Flanders, I think at best we're probably saying 95. McRae, unknown. We really just don't know, okay? So that puts him a good chunk of points ahead of the next best at the very worst case, okay? He doesn't have a bye. He does have a great mid-season buy, as you would know. The other thing he does do is he opens up the possibility of a Gaundy in your rucks if you want to go there. Because we are talking about Sean Darcy, okay? It's not like Sean Darcy has had this great history of no injuries or anything like that. It's like he's 115 kegs. He's a monster of a man. Like anything in the knee, is probably going to be extended a little bit, okay? So we just don't know. There's a lot of variables to this. But the thing is, you have to go and explore. We've got 10 days until round one. Like, we have to go and see it. Because I don't know about you, I would rather spend a couple of hundred thousand on a Billings head and be assured of that 100 as the sole ruck than of a Jack Billings and have that massive, massive point spread of 65 to 85 or whatever it is on any given week. That's the thing that you get with this, okay? So it's got a lot of flow-on effects all over the place.
So when we look at it, we also want to consider the ruck matchups that he's going to be having over those first 6 weeks. And they're not terrible, not great, especially that first few weeks. So he's got Brisbane Lions rucking against Oscar McInerney at Optus Stadium. It's pretty neutral, but he has had a good score against him in the past. Then he's got Tristan Cherry at Marvel Stadium, which, you know, it's a bit iffy to know how that's going to line up. Cherry's a pretty good hit at ruckman, but Jackson's a really mobile ruckman. He works really well as like a midfielder and getting around the ground, and I'm not sure that that is where Cherry's strongest suit is, so maybe he's able to beat him around that way. And similarly with someone like Riley O'Brien, he's a very good hit out ruckman, but he's not very mobile around the ground compared to a lot of some of the more modern ruckmen. Then he comes up against Pitney and De Koning, which is tends actually to be quite a friendly matchup for a ruckman. We saw what Max Gawn did to them in their preseason game. But these round 5 and round 6 matchups are really nice. He's got Port Adelaide, so Soldo Sweet, who, you know, Port have tried to fix their ruck issues. I don't think that Soldo and Sweet are the best two ruckmen in the world, but they're not world beaters, but they're not terrible either.
It's an improvement on where they were last year.
Exactly, exactly. But this is the key one. Round 6 versus West Coast. Matt Flynn is injured. We saw what Riley O'Brien did to Adelaide not a week ago. Absolutely towed them up. 170 SC, I think it was, in, you know, just over 65-70% game time. 130 odd AF, I think it was in the end, or something ridiculous. Like, that's in the realm of possibilities with the way that Jackson plays and if he's the solo rock. So I think that that is what you're aiming for. That's why I think a 6-week time frame is like, I think at 6 weeks, it becomes almost a no-brainer pick. I think you just almost have to think about how you fit him in, not whether you do or not. I think at a time period below that, it becomes a bit more of a, is it the right fit for my team? Is it the right fit for my structure? What do I actually sacrifice by bringing him into my squad? But at that 6 week plus point, it's just like you're putting 5 to 10 points on every other forward. You've got that DPP flexibility, which allows for some cover during the buys. If you're starting a ruckman that also has ruck forward DPP, It allows you to cover Gorn and Grundy, as Riz was talking about, and be able to bring a rookie score in at your forward line, where we've got probably some of our better rookies in our squads at this stage. Man, that just becomes super tempting.
And I'll tell you what, MJ, he really only needs to play four decent games because we got best 18 in round 5 and 6. So he may very well pop 100 anyway against West Coast as a forward, even if Darcy is playing. We just don't know those variables.
It does feel like it's this interesting option we've got now where we know we're going to get at least definitive one week on his own. We'll get great line of sight heading into round one, where the club will give us more level of clarity and go, it'll be 2 weeks or 3 weeks, or we'll ease him in. Then we can start to build our appetite for how we want to structure this side up. By then, we'll understand what the price movements might be in that accelerated of all the teams that have had that early matchup from opening round. So we're going to have a lot more information this time next week than what we do right now. But I think that idea is right of build the plans now. What's your bailout? What's your parachute? What's your contingencies? Because you're going to know a lot more in a week's time than what you do now. Now, I think he's a fascinating player. And what a surprise. In a matter of hours, a player can go from relevance to irrelevance in the fantasy football community. Jackson was probably not a popular pick, but off the basis of a couple of hours of information, he drastically moves in our eyes of what could be.
I mean, we've been able to see the ownership stats change over this preseason in AFL fantasy. You know, 1 week a player drops 10%, all of a sudden they're named back in the squad for a preseason game or for round zero. Their ownership goes back up 10% in 3 days' time. I think this might be the largest movement we'll see in a player for the entire preseason. Maybe unless there's someone who pops a 150, 160 score in the opening round that we didn't expect. But, you know, in AFL fantasy, his ownership might go up at 15, 20% overnight, and it might drop up to like 40, 50% in the space of a week. It is just ridiculous how quickly the crowd is going to move based on this information. And if you are aware of what's going on and you're keeping track of the right sources, the right injury reporting from the club and what they're saying, then you can be three steps ahead of anyone else who's not paying attention.
And just another one as well, MJ, is it's not just the pivot from Jackson either. It's a pivot opportunity from a Gorn or a Grundy if they do happen to have an injury over the first 4 or 5 weeks, because you can easily swing them to anyone on any line. If you're big on Cherry and he starts at 80s, you could swing him to, let's just say, a Riley Bonner after 2 games at a lower prop. Like, you can do a lot of flexibility with this, okay? So it opens up pivots everywhere. I do want to throw out a bit of caution to everyone, though. Don't kill your teams. You've spent the last 8 weeks trying to get, and you probably got really comfortable with where you're at. Yeah. Just don't go destroy it now. You might have just convinced yourself that Nick Dacos is going to be the starting D1 for this reason or that reason. And I know I did that on purpose. I didn't say M1 because I know that's the conversation we're having later. See, I did read the run sheet today. You might have just decided you want to go and bank on, don't go getting a Dacos down to a Zach Williams just so you can get someone up to Luke Jackson or something like that. Because that just won't fill you with confidence. Make sure you're improving your team with these bits of information that flow through during the preseason.
Yeah, it's some good advice. There was a bunch of things we learned through the AAMI community series we've done over on YouTube and also through our audio podcast platforms. You can go and check out my kind of 15, 20 minute pop-up reviews of every single one of those matches. It did feel like in most, if not all, we took away some really important learnings, either some positional variables to consider, some options of cash cows. We saw some big movers and shakers, both for the increase and rises that Mini Monkey alluded to before, as well as a few that kind of just slowed down a little bit.
I know that AI Rids is happening okay over the top of that, but I've just discovered raise hand options. So I'm going to be putting my hand up, even though it's a black screen with a raise hand now. I just wanted to I was going to say something, but now the raised hand thing's thrown me. So I'm just going to leave it for now. I'm going to lower it and we'll continue on, MJ.
So even though he read the run sheet, he hasn't changed a bit, which is when I'm mid-rant, he's going to jump in with something. So nothing's changed for the preseason of 2024. I've got five guys I want to put on the radar for you and get both of your perspective on them. I think we could probably make it 15 or 20 players if we're really honest. But let's pick five players that I think have either elevated in our mind or have drastically dropped away based on some performances we saw. Let's lead that out with a Zach Butters. I think he was a growing consensus value pick for us in AFL fantasy, where the consensus was he should be a 105 mid that can push 110, while in Supercoach, he was already a premium mid. And it was just that beautiful structure of early buy matchups through the buy round block, having that buy round that was beautiful in the middle, all of a sudden stars align. It's great. But a rolled ankle in the community series and then news that the club let us know a few weeks earlier that it was the same ankle injury that was just a little bit re-aggravated from a few weekends before, has the community, just based on ownership percentage, running scared. And so, Mini Monk, I'll start with you. And Rids, I know you'll jump in because you'll just raise your hand at some point, but are we panicking for something, or is this just the right level of reaction?
It's probably a bit of yes and no. I mean, the reason why the community is concerned is because of Zach Butters' injury history. It's not like this is something that he's pulled out of the blue and he's never had an injury before in his career. He's a player who's known to get quite injured throughout his career, be it for the only four seasons he's been playing for. And that's where the concern comes from, because it's like, if he's done it 2 weeks prior, he's then aggravated again and the club's taking a precautious approach with him, what's to say it won't happen again sometime early on in the season? What's to say it's something innocuous? Maybe it's just the reminder to people that he has a bit of an injury history. But then the other thing is, like, what's changed? Like, if he goes out and goes 140 against West Coast, would we really be surprised? Like, no, it's a bit of six of one, half a dozen of the other. It's a player that we have an injury history. We factor that into our concerns when we considered what his price was compared to what his output we had, the output that we think we had in his mind is. And now we've had the reminder that that output might not necessarily come risk-free and people overreact as a result of it. So I think that maybe his ownership is going to deflate to a level which is more realistic to what people actually consider as a comfort level in terms of his price to his output. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think that's a decision that coaches probably have to make inside of their own mind.
I think what we're going to really see in this discussion is Zach Butters' reward has probably decreased, that risk versus reward. There is potential that no matter, it's not going to be a significant injury because he won't play if it is, because there's no way known they're going to get him right for round one to play if he's not right.
Yeah.
The fact is, he's priced at 99. I mean, how much points upside do we really think, like 5-10 points upside? So the reward now goes, you know what, even if he's going to miss the last half of the last quarter or something because the club wants to take a conservative approach, that's enough to really dent the reward out of it. So that means the risk now becomes greater than the reward, which means you have to jump off him now to play it safe. Because I've said this a few times already, okay, through the year, one of the biggest learnings I had was you don't want to be unique and have a guy that doesn't do what you expect him to do. Otherwise, it's going to really hurt. Because
especially not at the high price tags.
Exactly. Yeah. That this is where you got to be really careful and you got to tread carefully. The only outlier to this, though, is he could be a potential real boom captain option in round one, which we would have been banking on. So, yeah, it's really hard, isn't it? Like, but at my size, I had him at M1 for a long time, MJ. I just went, you know what? Any hiccups, I'm just jumping off now because the reward wasn't there in the first place. I was doing it to try and cash in an extra 5 or 8 points, whatever. I just don't see that happening early. It will probably happen for the whole season, but early on, I just don't see it now with that draw.
Yep.
So I think when you're doing that and when you're looking at what Riz is saying, that he was someone that we probably looked at as a captaincy option against West Coast on the Sunday afternoon. I think he's the second last game of the round. Do the calculation. Figure out what your captaincy options now for those early rounds are. And if you need to pivot to someone else, be it someone like a Steele or an LDU, or you're going down even all the way to someone like a Martin or an Amon, and you're really taking the cash off of him, find out where your captaincy options now are. Find out where they lie in the round, what your VC and C options are going to be in those first few weeks. Because if you were relying on Butters to be someone who was filling that hole for you, now you've got to find the next person that's going to be able to do that for you.
So the team that comes in round one, there's only one matchup after that Port Adelaide game, and that is Fremantle and Brisbane. So you're very much narrowing the field. There are some captaincy options from those teams without doubt, but your price movement does need to change a little bit. So it's going to be interesting to see what people do. Sam Flanders is another. The community for big chunks of the preseason couldn't have been hotter on him. We've always been on the cooler side here at the coaches panel, and you can go back and listen to the episode that we did about him and why we're a little bit cooler on him. But still, all it takes is one big opening round score, and where his ownership has decreased this week, maybe Luke Jackson's made a viable play for people. All it will take is 100, 110, let alone anything above that against Richmond, and the community will flood back because they'll see what they need. So Rids, overreaction from the community or the right level of reaction?
I think it's the right level only because there was an overreaction to Dimmer's comments the week before. So, yeah. I mean, as much as I'd love to, we were so desperate to find an F1 that we could believe in. That yeah. Dimmer says, hey, let's make Gold Coast great again, or for the first time, make them great. Mm. And we went, yes, we've ridden that train last year, late last year, the Flanders train.
It was amazing.
And it was fun ride. Mm. But the fact is, there's a lot of variables that have changed. Even the time of year, the humidity has changed in the games where they're playing, like new style, new coach, people trying to come in. It doesn't matter if it's the fourth mid, fifth mid, third mid. It doesn't matter. It's going to be tough to actually get to that level of us being really happy with. We're paying 90, mate, for this guy. Yeah. Like, do we really? What are we expecting? If it's only going to be 5 points, and I think Monk said it the other week, I agree with him. There's no hurt factor, especially for two or three rounds until the bye's there. You know what happens? You might as well ride up Jack Billings or Nathan Fife and then explore. It may even be a Luke Jackson right now, and then explore trading into Flanders after, because we've now got pivots into Flanders. Mm. We don't need to start with Flanders because we were worried about where are we going to find that cash for the early part of the season to get a Flanders. We don't care. It doesn't matter anymore because we got many options to do that right now.
Yeah, and I think he's the one who's going to have an even further drop now that the Jackson and specifically the Darcy news has come out. Like, he is still, by a fair margin, the most selected forward premium in AFL fantasy. And I'm pretty sure it's the same in Supercoach and Dream Team at the moment as well. Mm. His ownership on the side is 30%. Adjusted, that's in about the 40% marker. I think give it a few days, that's going to be sub 20%. People are just going to be like, oh, Jackson's there. He's 40K. I might put that on the head of a rookie that I'm a bit more comfortable with. I'm just going to jump off Flanders because it's got the early buy and Jackson doesn't. So I think this is a really big monitor in terms of what happens there. And I think the question will be at some point as to when you actually get onto him, because I have no doubt that he will be in that top six conversation for our forwards. And I don't think I wasn't ever trying to push a narrative that I don't think he will be a top six forward throughout the end of the preseason. I just didn't think he was a player that was worth starting with. I just think he was someone that you're worth looking at after his bye.
Yep.
And MJ, you might be worried about your D8 or whatever, okay, at this point in time, or whatever you want to do, right? But you might be worried about Caulfield, and he might be your D6 at this point in time. That little bit of cash between Flanders to Jackson could actually get a Caulfield to a Zach Williams type or something like that, that where you might be a little bit more comfortable at that level at D6. But that's the sort of stuff, that's the sort of little tinkering that you got to have to play with to try and maximize your points outputs to against your dollars spend, okay, for your team. So that's what we're all trying to do right now is tweak it a little bit here and a little bit there. But I never saw any real, I wasn't really happy. I mean, I wouldn't have talked anyone out of it. No. Don't get me wrong. But the thing is, you are spending 90 on this guy and the conditions and the buy and there's a lot going against him.
Yeah. The variables were always, you're pushing an uphill. He's got the capacity we know to do it, but it did feel like the dice was more loaded in the sense of get the information you need from opening rounds, round one, round two, then adjust accordingly at round four rather than load into it in round one and then have to kind of bulk that potential pain in for, as you both mentioned, a little bit of upside. There has been some pretty big movements in one division of our side. You could argue all lines have seen some significant change. You're like, MJ, that's every line. But I think the rucks, there was a consensus selection across the formats from a lot of content creators, from a lot of the community. Broadly, it was, we love Grundy. And then it was the question of, are we saving some cash and going down to Cherry at two? Or are we bumping up and getting Gorn? Or do we like one of the elite two that did, again, nothing wrong in the Amy community series? Grundy was certainly underwhelming for people. His points per minute was okay, but he certainly didn't score to the expectation that I think people had. And so Minimunk...
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Are we overreacting? He didn't play out a full game. Were we expecting too much from him? Or is this now a really good learning that we can take heading into opening round?
I think it's another one where it's a bit of column A, bit of column B. I think some people had the expectation that Grundy was going to be a 105 ruckman. And I just don't see that that's the case. And I think that the practice match has shown that that's probably not the case. But I think there's easily a world where he's still able to push 95 and presents a fair chunk of value across the formats as well. So there is still an argument that he's a ruck that's worth considering starting. I think people were happy with what they saw from Gorn.
Mm.
And that's why the pivot came, because they said, oh, Gorn's done really well. I've got Cherry here as a value ruckman. I've got English and Marshall as ruckman that I can really spend up for if I wanted to. I can pair them with Gorn instead of pairing them with Grundy. Why don't I just consider that instead? And I think that that's the story for some of these players. When we're talking about the changes in ownership, it's not just what that player has done. It's what everything else that has happened around that player. And if you look at it, a lot of the early stages of the preseason, especially in AFL Fantasy, the trending in ownership was in opposite directions between Gorn and Cherry. And then after that Gorn game and then the Grundy game, that's changed. It hasn't been that Gorn and Cherry are trending against each other. It's been that Grundy, Cherry, and Gorn are all trending in different directions with each other.
The good news is we get opening round. That'll give us a lot of line of sight. And Rids, I know it's something we're going to talk about a lot next week in length about these players and scoring elements that we see, roles, and what are the indicators that we need to adjust or hold firm on. If you're a Grundy truther, what's something you can hold on heading into this matchup? Are you holding it tightly? If you're like, no, Grundy's going to be good. He's going to prove himself against Gorn. It's going to be okay for me this week. Or do we need to have some parachute plans pretty much ready to go?
Well, I think there's an obvious parachute plan already. If you're going Grundy and you're going Gorn, there is a parachute already. And I'm talking about Tristan Cherry, Radio.
Yeah.
Now, there's another one as well now that's come on today, and we've just been talking the last half 15, 20 minutes about him in Luke Jackson. We do have parachute options all the way around the place now. So I don't think that's going to be an issue at all, Radio. Yeah. What you got to do is you've got to go, you know what? I've seen Grundy do this before. I know what he's capable of. He has been a beast in years gone by. Is he the same player? Like, is he going to go that level again? What's my expectation? He's priced at 75. Now, for me personally, I think there's a more chance of a Tristan Cherry going 85 than a Grundy going 95, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the 20 points per game jump you're alluding to.
Yeah, so it's a 20 point, but then you're also saving the dollars between Grundy and Cherry that you can go put on someone's head, someone else's head on that. So that's the sort of stuff. And I mean, I've been pretty vocal. I know all of us have. We always thought it was always, we should be planning on trying to go one off Gawn and Grundy, and then having Cherry as the R2. So that way then, because both the guys had the buys, we could have then worked things around. They are a potential VC option, you know, week to week, depending on their matchups, not so much in opening round, but luckily for us, we don't play in opening round because they play each other. So they do have reasonably okay matchups every second week or so up until their buys. So there is options there. If you like Grundy, I don't think I saw anything on the weekend, MJ, besides a team going, you know what, we're going to protect our number one, like, recruit.
Yes.
We're going to go put him on the thing. We're going to play Laddams. We're going to give Laddams a lot of ruck time to get him ripe for the season proper, because there is a chance that he will be required at some point. Swans don't have a massive forward line. They could swing him into that. Like, why not explore it, yeah? But why would Brody Grundy have to go out in a scratch match, preseason match, whatever you want to call it, and bust his ass to try and prove that he's a good ruck? We already know he is.
100%. I think it's more a reflection of how dominant Gawn was and how good he looked, rather than it is an indication of Grundy was subpar in the matchup. So I think that's probably more the
But I think what we've missed, MJ, is Gawn's got a bit of shit on the liver, you know? They've been bundled out 2 years in a row in straight sets. He's had Joel Smith incidents, Clary Oliver incidents. He's had that much turmoil over he's the captain of the club, mate. Like Angus Brayshaw just retired from that Maynard hit from last year, which, you know, culminated into more and more and had more concussions. Mm-hmm. Like he's feeling like he's under pressure. He wants to go out. He's got motivation to go out and lead from the front. I'm the captain, boys. You come and jump on my back and I'll show you the way. Whereas Grundy's like a pretty laid-back character, new club, just cruising. What's he got to prove? He's got no motivation there. His motivation's going to be in round one, mate, when he plays his old club that didn't want him. Round.
Yeah, exactly right. So there's two other guys that have been big movers, maybe structurally or in terms of what we saw. Riley Bonner is one of those. I think a lot of people hadn't even considered him. I think there's a ton of people in the community that were like, he's not with Port Adelaide anymore. When did that happen? Is he still on an AFL list? Yes, he's at St Kilda, and he's got a bit of a distribution role. Mini Monk, my question for you is, does he hold this spot for the year, or is this a gap filler while Jack Sinclair is out early days in the season? Because if it's whichever of those two it is, that determines how much interest you've got early on Sinclair's arrival. It looks like round three, the club are expecting him to be back by. What's your take on Bonner? Is this a legit halfback role he's going to hold, or is he just a Selly's all gap kind of holding the fort together a little bit until Sinclair returns?
Man, I'm not even sure that Ross Lyon knows what he's doing in the halfback point. I mean, you can see how much rotation they had back there last year. Sinclair moved into the midfields and he moves back. Wangan and Milero comes off of a wing, goes into the halfback role. They've got Brad Hill. They've got Liam Henry. I mean, what actually is going to go on in that role? It's really hard to say who's actually going to get the massive bump. We've seen Bonner get it in both the practice match and then the preseason game that the club has played, and he's been able to put together two pretty good scores. And I think it's his price and his price point and where he fits into our midfields that's got people so interested, because realistically, outside of maybe a Thompson Dow, people aren't really looking for anyone at a similar price bracket in their teams. And, you know, with the way that restructures are happening, people are trying to push players off of D6 to being, you know, an actual decently priced player. People are spending down in their forward lines. A natural consequence was, why don't we try and spend down at M6? Don't really want to put a rookie onto our field at M8 and push Sanders and McCurch up another spot. Let's look for someone in that 400K barrier. Oh, Bonner's popped his head up with two really good scores. Let's slot him in there for the time being. Whether or not it's real, it's really hard to say. I think this is the type of player I have a lot more comfort trading into. But you could also make the argument that it's not hard to trade out of him either. At that price tag, if he fails, you just trade him down to the next rookie that's popping. You give yourself 150K to be able to fix up a broken rookie or go up from a player that you've got wrong as a mid-price and go up to the premium that's popping. I found myself kind of leaning to both sides in that he's a player that I want to trade into, but he's also a player that I wouldn't mind considering starting. So I think it's just a structural decision in the end for the coach.
Yeah,
I'm going to throw a different slant on this, MJ.
Of course, please. Of course, we've got you both.
If you start Riley Bonner, and I hope he goes well, okay? He's a top 20 pick from a few years ago. He looks like a nice player, okay? But if you start him and he sucks, are you going to beat yourself up because you got sucked in by bruise-free 40 preseason games, which absolutely suit Riley Bonner's game and is potential that Riley Bonner actually excels in those games? I'm not going to say that you're doing the wrong, because that right now he's a good option at 400,000.
Looks,
but the fact is, are you going to beat yourself up? Why not just allow yourself one game and then trade into him if you believe it's real? Okay, we've all been fooled before, yeah? So it's going to happen again. It's probably going to happen tomorrow. Like, we're going to be fooled on all the time, but I would hate going, you know what, there's this little noise in the back of my head going, I'm getting tricked here. And then I went and gone, no, you know what? I'm not being tricked. I haven't been tricked. I'm going to go jump on him. And then he tricks you.
Yeah.
I would absolutely hate that. And it would probably take me to about round 21 before I forgave myself for being tricked.
It's the kind of selection that you get into heading into round two and you're like, I feel like my season's already over and it's my fault because I got too cute. Kind of thing.
And mate, you think about it, okay? You've spent the past 3 months, okay, probably not with as much family time as what you could have, talking about fantasy football and the best 50, most relevant, whatever. Where we sit in here, what time is it now? 10:30 on a Tuesday night.
Oh, don't tell people we're recording that.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
My mirrors is gone.
Oh, yeah, that's all right. I'm hidden behind AI reads. It's all good. Oh, yeah, the fact of the matter is, though, mate, we already spend way too much time. So one mistake feels like it's the end of the world and we beat ourselves up for a month.
Yeah.
I've got the counterpoint to that.
Oh, good.
And I think if you're making a 450K mistake, I'd much rather make that than an 850K mistake.
And that's what I was going to say. Yeah, that's how I was going to finish off. You'd rather make that mistake at that lower price point, yeah? Because I made a mistake last year with Rory Laird, and then I compounded it by holding him for that extra little period of time. And
when you had the option to get off it, yep.
Yeah, it kills your season, and it kills your motivation to stay in the season.
Yeah,
I understand.
I don't think I think that it needs to be elaborated. I don't think if Bono comes out and goes 60-60 or even 50-50, that's going to be the thing that breaks your season, because there's enough things that you can do with the cash that's already on his head in terms of restructuring. But if you pick a premium that's priced at 105, 110, and they go 80-80, that is going to hurt you so much more.
Yeah. And it's using that trade to get off Bonner, and who you miss is going to be that. Because if you miss this year's Jack Siebel or Will Setterfield because you're jumping off Bonner, that hurts. That really hurts.
That's when you're playing catch up while everyone else is accelerating ahead, and the trade cadence gap of a week behind becomes 2 weeks, and all of a sudden with trade boosts in Supercoach, AFL Fantasy Coach, you can find yourself 3 weeks, 4 weeks behind and your year's done and you're only at week 10. That's absolutely an element there. There's one guy that didn't play in the community series though that the club have come out and confirmed he's going to play, that structurally feels really dynamic for us, and it could mean a lot. The good news about this player is we will see opening round. We'll see what the player looks like. We'll know what the score is. We'll get an element of look and see at what the accelerated price movement will be because of it. And given that his buy round is round two, we want to know what that accelerated price movement will be. Talking about Zach Williams, Rids, structurally, how important is he our sides?
No. We don't do this. We go the first question. You've got to ask you a question here, MJ.
My host.
The question isn't is what's the structure. The question is about his accelerated cash gen. And what comes down to the accelerated cash gen is what is your line? What do you want to see from Zach Williams in opening round for you to pick him?
I'm not going to be needed on this podcast soon. I'm going to get voted out very, very soon. I look forward to this. What you tell me, boys, what is it? Because in Supercoach, he's not going to move price for us. It's opening round on round one. So Supercoach and Dream Team is different. AFL Fantasy, we do get the double movement. So what's the line for people? Is it a 70? Is it a look? Is it only a score that determines it? What is it for us, boys?
I actually think 3/4 of football and he's linking up and running freely.
Roll. Yep.
I really do. I don't care what he scores in opening round because it doesn't go to my team's score anyway. I want to hear what the coach says after the game. How's he pulled up? How's he moving? Because, you know, the thing that I get more confident about is if he pulls up well, he's definitely going to be there for that round one monster game on the Thursday night against Richmond.
The Tigers. Yeah.
Yep. That's the thing. And that's the friendly one as well. Like you looking at these halfback distributing type roles, Thursday night against Richmond, man, he could feast if he's got that role where, you know, as you said, if he gets to 75% game time in that game and he's distributing of halfback alongside Adam Saad, man, that could be a 90 AF and a 100 super coach, just like that. And I think that Rids is right. And I'm a bit, probably a bit more hesitant. I think that there is a certain line that you want to see, but I think that that comes in with the role. Like if he doesn't score a 70 in AF or a 70 in super coach, chances are he probably doesn't have that distributing role. Chances are he's not the one that's been getting a lot of the ball. He's probably just having to use his aerobic capacity a bit more than what his actual skills are. And that's where you start to get a bit more concerned. So as much as it's about what the role is, I think the two are so intrinsically linked that if he has a good role, the good score will also be there.
Yeah, it's a
fair shout. MJ, the one thing I want to throw out there, have your pivot point ready for that opening game.
Yeah, up or down.
Yep. Whatever you 100%. Want to do, just have it ready because that's the game he's going to be the laid out.
Yeah, it's good. And I love that you're highlighting the role element. There's a touch of preseason about it in opening round where sometimes we look for role and opportunity and game style and the uniqueness of what the matchup is. I can see a lot of people being saved by opening round where they're going to get bailed out of selection errors. Equally, I can see on the flip side of the coin, people over-yoking something and going, he scored this, it was amazing and I'm jumping on it. It's like, no, that is the unicorn. That is the uniqueness of the game, the uniqueness of the matchup and making drastic moves. So opening round poses fantastic amount of variables for us.
So what you need to do, and this is going to derail a bit of your conversation, but what you need to do is you need to make yourself a list ASAP of the eight teams that are playing in opening round and list out every player that you have considered from those squads. And if they are not a player... if there's a player that pops in opening round that wasn't on that list, don't suddenly change. Don't suddenly jump on Hayden McLean because he's popped a 90 odd, or I don't know, Nick Blakey because he went 95 in Supercoach. Like, have that list so you know where you stand, so that you don't get baited into players just because they have a pop score, because it happens. We've seen it from players in round one where people have a massive score in round one, people jump onto them, and then they correct and they regress back to the mean, and they go back to what they typically score. Don't get baited in.
And yeah, I heard a lot of discussion about Ryan Burton based off a score last week in a preseason game.
Yeah, good example.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really good example. A guy that would never sit into calculations, and there's no variables that have changed that put him into that calculation. It's just that matchup.
Well, the variable is that Port Adelaide got big guys in the back line, which might have freed Burton up. I get that. But you don't want to just go and back in one sighting of it.
One game.
Yeah. You want to see it a couple of times before you believe it's real.
Yep, that's fair call. Let's talk about starting structures, and specifically around the early buys. Really, let's call it best 18, with rounds 2, 3, 5, and 6 for all these 8 teams that are playing an opening round. Yes, we'll get an accelerated price movement, which is yay good. And we get a chance to look and see what it is in an actual game of AFL football that counts for AFL Premiership points. The pain point is we miss them for a week. The question is this: is it really a pain point for our structures? The moment that the fixture was announced and opening round was confirmed, the community's response was, oh, I don't want to touch any premiums. I got no interest in that. Oh, in fact, I don't want any interest in anybody. Then it kind of swung back towards the left side of it, went, maybe you can take value guys and cash cows. That's okay. Then it swung back to, no, you can take premiums too. It's fine. Just go build deeper squad bench. And now there's kind of an ebb and flow somewhere between them. Maybe it depends on the cycle of the moon or which content creator's podcast you've listened to. Whatever,
or how
it
good
is,
your hair is on that day.
Thank you very much for that. I appreciate that. How's the miso? But regardless, there's always going to be that ebb and flow of how people approach it, because we've never had this experience before. And that's the unknown, is we're heading into unknown territory. So talk to me, boys, from how best you can see it now. Again, we don't know what opening round will hold. We are recording this, thanks to Rids. You know exactly the time that this is being done during the day. What's your take? Are we overreacting to the best 18? Are we underreacting? What's your take on how we're structuring up and avoiding or embracing these premiums from the best 18 weeks?
We probably started off overreacting one way, and then we overcorrected the other way, and we're probably finding our spot right in the middle where we should be.
Yeah, correct.
And that's what happens. And I think the simple thing when you're looking at that opening buy round is, how many players do you have missing from round 2, round 3, round 5, and round 6 across your team and across each line? Because if you have 3 premiums from the round 2 buy that are all missing, chances are I'd probably say to you, maybe have a think about that.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
That's probably not a great idea. But if it's one missing in round 3 and then another one missing in round 6 and say your midfield, and then you got one missing in round 5 in your back line and one missing in round 2 in your forward line, you're probably fine. Like, that's the other thing, is that if you've got the good cover in those lines, like especially in our forward and mid lines, well, we have some pretty good rookies that we aren't comfortable fielding, but we think can pop a decent score on their day, and we can loop between because of the way that the lockout is going to apply for these players. It mitigates a lot of the risk and a lot of the uncertainty with some of these players. So I think it's not a go out and pick these round, you know, these round 2, round 3, round 5 premiums because they're the best players. And I don't think it's as much as avoid them. It's like, but if the player pops a good score in round 0 and they were in your considerations and you can see them being a good scorer for the rest of the year, really consider them as being a player that you actually start, because chances are that is a pretty good unique that you could have on a lot of the crowd who might not be as enthralled with starting a player that has an early buy.
And the way I'm doing it, MJ, is the guys, and I've been pretty big on Jack Billings, okay, because I think it's a need that Melbourne have. But guess what? I'm not big on him from a fantasy point of view because he's burnt me before. I'm going to use him and go, I want to watch you and know what I'm walking myself into in round one, because I can actually, I'll have something tangible to go off. Is 70 going to be enough? What's he need in round two? Is the matchup going to suit him? And if any of that is no, then I can look into a Cam McKenzie, or I can look at a Nat Fyth, or I can look at a Tom Powell. It doesn't matter who the name is. I can go and have a look at these guys because I'm winning both ways. And we were going to do this with James Jordan. I think we've suggested this a few times with James Jordan as well. But the thing is, now due to the injuries of Sydney, James Jordan looks more likely to be in a more productive position on the ground. So we're going to probably back him in from now. Same thing with Sam Flanders. Not Sam Flanders, the other one, the sexy time.
Alex Sexton.
He's done enough and he's at the right price point that we're just going to back him in. We don't care what he does in round zero. Yeah. We're just going to back these guys in. But someone like a Jack Billings is the one. You see what I mean? Like, and this is why I love the fact he was in that relevant list, was he is so relevant to everything that we're going to set up. And this one game in 2 or 3 days' time is going to drive whether he's going to be owned by 50% of the world or 5% of the world.
Yeah, it's true.
I think that the conversation always has to be different in your mind, whether the player is a premium, a mid-pricer, and a rookie as well. And I think Jaden put out some fantastic stats from the AFL's fantasy side of things, which showed what your 19th and 20th and 21st players tend to look like in terms of their scoring through those early rounds. Something like 65 points, roughly, is what your 19th player is scoring. So if you've got a player that's priced at 65 and they miss because of their early buy, chances are you're at a net zero loss. You've got a player that's coming in that's filling in with a 65 as well. Great. Huge win. Alex Sexton in AFL Fantasy is priced at 40. So if he misses round two, that doesn't really cost you much. Jack Billings, I think, is priced at 65, 63, something stupidly low. It might even be lower than that. Again, he misses because of an early buy. Still a net win. You're still not losing that much out of it. But once you get over that tipping point, once you start to get to that mid-price range, say someone like a Kadeen Coleman, who's priced at about 68, 70, or Sam Flanders, who's priced at 89, 90.
Yeah.
That's where the tipping point starts to become an issue. And that's where you start to need to factor in, what's the point loss? What's the point upside that the player has? How do I balance these things across my entire squad?
It's good shout.
I'm going to throw another name out there that we should really have a quick touch on, and that's Zach Fisher. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's priced at 70. What are we expecting him to actually go? Like, I know he's got the halfback role. He looks great. He came back on the weekend, really popped. But he is priced at 70. Do we really expect him to go more than 85? Sometimes we get a little bit, oh, wow, there's the red car. It's shiny. Let's go have it. But the thing is, that's what it is. What are we trying to get out of these guys and manage your expectation with them?
Yeah, some good advice. Before we wrap up this strategy episode, the final one before opening round, I want to talk about the M1 position. It feels like it's created some great diversity of what squads look like. You've got some in the community that are not anti, but hesitant to want to spend up for players that are priced 110 plus across the formats. You've got others that just don't want to risk the potential cash loss. So they're spending in at that 9,500, 105 potential spot across the formats. But we're seeing some great diversity. A Bontempelli, people that were Bontempelli truthers before the weekend, they've not lost any sleep what they've seen. They're much more bullish on that. You could throw an Errol Goulden and even a Tom Green into that same level of conversation. And coaches are, you know, we talk about the ebb and flow of how they see the buys. It's like, oh, I might be able to find a way to get a premium mid in, get that captaincy, vice captaincy, and throw a sharp type onto my field, and I might be okay if I get a ceiling type of score. Then you've got the Brayshaw and the Laird. You've got a bunch of different guys through there. And then there's probably another five or six I could throw in the mix that would all sit in that M1 spot. Talk to me about how we should be approaching this M1 position. Are we dictated by the score? Are we dictated by our structures? Are we dictated by the fixtures? What should be the leading indicators for us here about how we approach who we pick at M1?
So, MJ, a couple of weeks ago, I turned around and said, I don't want to have that problem in investing in 110 guy and having to have that awkward conversation whether I trade out of them or not at that point in time.
A la 12 months ago with Rory Laird that you
correct
mentioned before. Yeah.
Pretty much what's changed, though, is we have got so much value across everywhere. Like, we've got too much money now. And then what that means is, do we really have that legit captaincy option that we're really can banking in? And I'm talking like I was going to use Butters and Jack Steele, for instance, as the VCC. Mm. Now, Gawn potentially has come in now with that latest score to say, hey, I'm here still, guys. It's like, great. But last year we had all these forwards. We had a few defenders. We had midfielders.
Rucks with England, you know, and Marshall. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so we do actually, we go, you know what? Bontempelli, like a Goulden, for instance, a Green, they're only 150,000 more than what we were going to spend on our original M1. And we've already got 350,000 spare in the bank. Why not go and lock in that captaincy option? And I think it's actually going to really pay dividends to do so in that best 18 format, where we really want to have that nailed in captaincy that we can trust, you know, that we can actually take on 110 VC going, no, I think my C, you know, a couple of years ago, we used to do it all the time when we had the Rockcliffes and the Ablets and the Swans and everything. We used to go, no, 110's not the draw. We're going to go for 125. But recent times, what we've done is we've gone, oh, no, we're going to take that 110 VC because we don't want to risk that 15 points. But what we've forgotten about is the quality of coach in this competition that we're up against is risen so much higher. The standard is so much higher. The information is out there. Everyone's talking about it. There's groups, there's water coolers, there's whatever else, okay? It just doesn't stop, but everyone's saying the same, the right messaging. You know, the CBAs, which was almost unheard of until the draft doctors invented it a couple of years ago. But now it's sort of, even we're watching commentators say it in the football, like, you know, we're hearing this. Like, is it going to be like the market share, the stoppage transition ratios, whatever? Is this the next big thing that's going to come through? Who knows, mate? But that's what we're up against. So 15, 20 points is actually hundreds of ranking spots these days, not just 10 ranking spots.
Yeah.
15 points over the 23 rounds or 24 rounds that you play of AFL Fantasy, it's 350 odd points.
It's a big gap.
Think about how much your rank would increase if you chucked on another 350 points to it. It's a lot. Like, I know for a fact that my captaincy is something that I need to improve on as a fantasy coach. I'm not very good at picking captains. I can't nail one down. But if you have a reliable captain option that has good fixtures in those early few weeks, even if they have an early bye, that can be a separator. Like, look at someone like Tom Green. Yes, he has that bye in round three, but who does he play in round one and round two? North Melbourne and West Coast. it's juicy fixtures. Or someone like Bontempelli, who had the best ceiling and best floor out of any player in Supercoach for the year. Like, these are the types of players you actually seriously want to consider, because if we've got the value like we do across all the other lines, where we're really spending down in our forward lines, we're really spending down our midfielders, we've got those value options in our midfield that we're looking for, we've got a pretty good idea of how we're setting our defense, and you've got 200k left over, why not chuck it on the head of someone like a Steele, an LDU, you know, whoever it is at around that 800k price bracket in AFL Fantasy or that 500k price bracket in Supercoach, and get that safe captaincy option. But when you're looking for the distinguishing factors between A and B and C in those captaincy options, what you've got to look at is you've got to look at what's their floor, what's their ceiling, and what's their fixture. Because those are the three things that matter for captaincy so much more than anything else. If you have a player that has in the first 6 weeks, because I think this is where it's going to matter the most, because that's before you can get to your upgrades, before you can start making those big moves towards the premiums that you want.
Mm.
If you can get a premium that has four or five good fixtures and at the right times of the round as well, so you can look to VC and C loop with another player, that's when it's an absolute pick. That's when it's the ones that you really want to target.
And these are the guys, FJ. This is where the conversation is with their mind. We're not looking at generated cash from these guys. We're looking at points. This is a points focus. So you've got to then go and cater for extra cash generation within your team to make up for that lost cash generating spot that you're utilizing there, if that makes sense. There is also, and I know Monk hates this terminology, there is the aspect of a keeper, okay? Like, I'm not saying that you can't trade out of them, but the fact is you're going to look at holding these guys for as long into the season as you potentially can be. Now, you might still pivot away from them at some point because their draw sucks or they score a 60 or whatever else, or they hit a bye and they hit a bad stretch of two run. Who cares how it is, but you can still pivot out of them. But guess what? You can pivot to a guy who's going to make money. You're freeing up money in that trade, and then you're generating money. So there are ways of doing this.
Yeah. I think I found the term to replace it. It's my...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What a cool background coming in, but it needs to be an anchor. It's an anchor. You drop your anchor and you're saying, I want to lock my team around this player. And eventually you might get to some stormy seas, or you might want to move to another harbor, and you pull that anchor up and you move along and you put a new anchor down. But that's what you're looking for. You're looking at the type of player that you can have stability and safety in those early rounds of the season. And you want to ride for as long as you can until it gets to the point where they're no longer needed.
I'll tell you what, MJ, you could take the boy out of Fremantle, but you don't take the Fremantle out of the boy, do you? Anchor. Absolutely. Are you serious? Anchor.
It's in your fantasy lexicon, ladies and gentlemen, to be able to enjoy that. That is for sure. Oh, there's some interesting teams that have some of those top-end premiums that have some very tasty fixtures. A Goulden, a Green, a Laird, if you're that way inclined, a Bontempelli. There is some justificational clause that if you're happy to, Rosie. And then there's a guy that I didn't mention. You might have noticed when I went through M1, I listed all these guys, and then I didn't mention a Nick Dacos. Was that a mistake that I didn't mention Nick Dacos with a defender mid, or was that strategic? Rids, who's never short of saying what he thinks, should we factor in Nick Dacos in this conversation?
No, MJ, it's nearly 11 o'clock now, just so anyone's watching the time at home. I think you're getting fatigued, mate, and it was an absolute mistake because, yeah, we've spoken about Nick Dacos all day, every day for many times now. He's actually got okay fixtures. I'm not saying every fixture. There's some okay ones there. 100%. If you want to start him as your M1, knock yourself out, because guess what? You just got to cater for a Jeremy Sharp type to come on for him at his bye. Because I even said to people, you know, you had that curtain in the midfield on the utility, and then you trade him across and then you put the Sharp on. That's how you can do it. It's not really that hard. Like, you just got to plan for it.
Yeah. No, it's fair enough too. Well, as you know, it's late at time of recording, but also it's been a big, long episode. We thank you so much for tuning in. We hope it helped you get through as a, well, the last few days and moments ahead of opening round. Rids, as always, a pleasure, mate. Thanks for jumping on board this episode.
Yeah, mate, this is 3 hours past my bedtime. I'm getting old.
Yeah, okay. Well, good for you. And Mini Monk, always a pleasure, mate.
It's good to be on, and two more days, or not even know at the time this gets out until we've actually got footy on our TVs.
Yeah, it's getting really, really close. If you've been enjoying these video
episodes. Guess what, MJ?
Oh, here we go.
I'm going to anchor myself on the sofa when the footy starts. I'm just going to anchor me. Yeah, it's where I'm going to be, on the sofa.
The new anchored term. That's it. It was the Harry Sheezel of fantasy football. Now he is the anchor.
And then I'll go, yeah. Miss O, grab me a beer, please.
Oh, here we go. Turn it up. If you want to go back and watch this episode on YouTube or any of the other episodes we've revealed and released throughout the preseason, you can go and check that out. You just simply search for the Coaches Panel on YouTube, and it is there for you to check out, as well as the audio podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, pretty much wherever you search for your podcast, we're there. Make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star rating. We do greatly appreciate it. In the description of this episode is a couple of things. One, where you can get in touch with us all individually, and also the Coaches Panel as a whole across all of your social media formats, as well as where you can join our Patreon supporter group. They've been getting a ton of bonus rewards. And just in the past couple of days, a couple of people have jumped in at that premium tier level. There's a ton of names to thank that are in the breakout and also the cash cow level. But Michael H has jumped involved in that. Thank you, mate, for being able to step up to that level. Rowan Porter has jumped in. So thank you, Ron, we appreciate you. Ben has jumped in at that tier, as well as Michael A as well. So there's a bunch of Michaels. So if your name's Michael and you're not on the Patreon, sort yourself out and jump on board. All the details, though, you want to get involved. Once opening round is done, we reveal our rookie guide, which is a massive article that comes your way. It's something like 50, 60, 70 pages long, as well as a podcast and a ton of other rewards. So if you're not part of the Patreon supporter group, take a few minutes, jump involved. We would greatly appreciate it. And so, opening round is upon us. A week where we will be anchored to our couches, watching football, making lots of learnings, and potentially lots of changes to our fantasy sides. Will they help us or hurt us? We will be back with you next week, talking about what opening round has done to us and what it's going to mean for our teams heading into 2024.